Hello and welcome. Wherever you are, you're hearing my voice from the void. My name is Testimona. You might be listening to this on my Substack, Memento Mori Alchemy. You might be listening to this on my podcast, The Great Remembering. Or who knows? But either way, I'm Testimona. I am a singer, songwriter, musician, poet, dissident, traveler of many realms, and I am here because I just cannot stop the pursuit of the liberation of the human spirit and humanity as a whole with that which we face. And today, my friends, highly suggest using this technology to organize in real life. Please see the last post around some ideas around that, because we do have some action plans going on. This applies to Substack. If you are not listening to this on Substack, I highly suggest you navigate over there. Link in the description. It is free. You don't have to pay money like you do on X to have a voice. And you can subscribe to my publication or any publications for free. You can also start your own. And if you want to earn money, you can. And if you just want a place to share ideas, long form, unedited, uncensored, you can. Today, let's make it brief but important. We're going to talk about the mystical teachings of the number 5 through a Kabbalistic numerology perspective. I will preface this with, I am not an expert. I am not a practicing mystical Kabbalist. I learn from one and have been for years, but I am not in any way any kind of all-knower on this stuff, all right? So, situation. I'll include an image of this on Substack. I don't know if you'll be able to see it if you're hearing the podcast, but I am looking at a giant, beautiful painting of mostly golds, and it says the number 5. And 5 is repeated 3 times. This was sent to me as a Christmas gift, actually, by my dad. And it is a painting from Charles DeMuth. It is early 20th century, contemporary of Georgia O'Keeffe, and a friend of the poet William Carlos Williams, who wrote a poem of the same name. So I have yet to look up that poem, but I absolutely will. If I have time, I will include it in the show notes. But I opened this and I see the triple numbers of 5, and immediately that's going to catch my eye, right? Because I do pay attention to the way the divine, indescribable force that we often call God will speak to us, often through repetitive numbers, and especially when you see the power of a triple number and the significance of the color gold being used here is absolutely brilliant. And so we're going to talk about that real quick. So I opened this and I immediately ran to my own makeshift drawing of the Kabbalistic Tree of Life, which is not fully complete, but it is enough for me to look at, okay, like, where is 5 on the Tree of Life? Let's start there. So it's in the 5th sphere, or Sephirah. I'm pronouncing that likely incorrectly. The pronunciation for 5, if I pronounce this correctly, is Gebra. It's kind of like Deborah, but with a G, G-E-B-U-R-A-H. And that means strength and severity. The planetary attribution to this sphere, this is Mars. So often Mars energy, that's a tough energy to harmonize with, right? But we all have this energy within us, and it operates in the cosmos and in the mundane all around us. I mean, we know Mars, the Lord of War, but it's also other things too. Interesting that this sphere of Mars connects through the bridge of the serpent into the 4th sphere, ruled by Jupiter, one of mercy. That's what that the Hebrew word translates to, chesed, but I may not be pronouncing that correctly, so if there are Kabbalists listening to this or people who speak Hebrew listening to this, forgive. I am not somebody who speaks Hebrew. So it's very interesting. And then once you get to the fourth sphere, that's a whole nother conversation. We won't go into that today. So I look at that, and I'm also noticing the gold, and this ties in. So I open my numerology book, which was written by Remington Donovan. That's who I learn from. Highly recommend his teachings. So everything I am about to share with you is the words of Remington Donovan, not me. He has a book called Numerology, A Beginner's Guide to the Spiritual Meaning of Numbers. And I will actually link that in the show notes. Okay, so when it comes to the number five, what a beautiful illustration. I love this. Wow. So yes, Mars, number five, associated with the zodiac sign Aries. Some of the words around it are teacher, trailblazer, warrior, initiator, enforcer, editor, athlete. Now, why editor? Well, the symbol associated with this number is a sword. The sword is used to cut through illusions and that which is holding us back from our true purpose, our dharma, all of that stuff. So already I'm like, it was not an accident that I received this, because that theme, especially with the cutting away, is the most dominant theme for me in my life right now. I will begin to read. The number five represents the physical body. It is the teacher, disruptor, and editor. The number five is a very assertive, aggressive, and corrective energy field. It knows how to use force and how to use action. Okay, so let me just get into this. I'm not going to read all of it because that would take a lot of your time. Okay, let's see. Let me decide what I want to read to you, which would be... Oh, wow, there's really quite a bit on the teacher. I'm going to include this. The number five is a teacher. What else does a teacher... Ooh... I'm about to make the connection between this number and this energy with Ketu, especially with the color gold, so just bear with me. Okay, so what Remington says is, we've gone through the soul body, which is one, the different bodies of the mind, negative mind, which is two, positive mind, three, and neutral mind, four. And now we've reached the number of the physical body. We've incarnated into our bodies in corporal form, to learn karmic lessons. Ironically, this is me talking now, ironically, my karmic numerology for my life is five. Okay, back to Remington. The number five is a teacher. What else does a teacher do? A teacher corrects, balances, and restores order. The number five is always about restoring balance. There is a yogic teaching about the five tattvas, which are the five elements, fire, water, air, earth, and spirit, or ether. You always want to have these energies in balance. Think of Ayurvedic medicine and Chinese medicine, where one might have too much fire or not enough fire. It is the assertive, corrective nature of the number five that brings things into order. A teacher is someone who can correct a deficiency, resolve a deficit, and bring order, balance, and righteousness into a situation. Does this mean somebody with a lot of fives in their chart has to be a teacher? No, but it does suggest that this is a person who can correct a situation. This number also represents the throat chakra, which is responsible for communication. Again, think of a teacher. What do? They communicate and correct. The number five is about communicating what is right and having the ability to speak up about your needs and wants and so put things into action. The number five is a pointy number. It has a very dynamic, powerful, and fierce energy. In Kabbalah, the number five is the sword, and the sword is meant to cut through illusion. This number wants justice. Think of it like weeding out your garden. The number five goes in and removes whatever is getting in the way of your growth and destiny. The teacher helps clear the way and cut through obstacles. Number five is the warrior. On the tree of life, it is called Gebra, which means strength and severity. Its planetary attribution is Mars. Mars is power, right action, vigor, instinct, empowerment, assertion, and war. For example, let's observe the Pentagon, which functions as the war offices of the United States of America. To be honest, I couldn't think of a better shape for a building that relates to war. Mars is raw energy and raw power, but this energy and power need to be sustained and to be used for good. Think right action. Do the right thing for the right reason and use the energy of five. It is also the number of destruction. Now, we can use destruction in a positive way to clear away, obliterate, and then liberate. The number five is a powerhouse. It is the number of action. It is a go-getter. It's a quick starter. The key to the number five is taking that little burst of energy and using it to sustain and have more impact on the world. The energy field of five sparks a new beginning. It takes initiative and creates change. A teacher is one who often pokes and provokes in a way that can inspire you. The number five is like a little jab. Not that kind of jab, okay, y'all? That was me. Back to Remington. It's that fire under your butt that gets things going, which is why five is the number of activation. The energy, ooh, this is a big one, you guys. The energy of five also knows how to say no. That's a big lesson from the number five. No is the new yes. Get comfortable saying no. This number knows what it wants and it knows what it doesn't want, hence going through numbers 1 through 4 prior and the levels of the mind. The number five, that was me, by the way, back to Remington. The number five is great at setting and communicating boundaries. It's okay to assert yourself, say no, and set a boundary, but you don't have to be a jerk about it. With a little bit of practice, you will realize that assertion isn't aggression. This is an assertive number. It says, hey, I'm going to take action. The number five is the energy that gets us out of bed. It's like the alarm clock that wakes us and shows us it's time to head to the gym. The number five can balance a situation because it takes away the things that don't serve the righteous order of whatever that situation is. We always need an energy that can cut away and clear. It's like peeling and chopping vegetables. You cut away what you don't want. Remember, the number five is like an editor. Whether you're editing a film, book, magazine, or anything in your life, when your connection with five is strong, you can decide what to cut away, identifying what doesn't serve the real essence and the soul of what you're editing, whether that's your existence, a project, or a particular situation. It is considered a number of sacrifice. What are you sacrificing? You're sacrificing that dead weight. When your connection with five is strong, you can clear away so many obstacles and really empower yourself. The negative side of the number five can be overly assertive, aggressive, temperamental, rash, and impulsive. It could also manifest as someone who does not stand up for themselves, does not communicate their wants and needs, and does not set boundaries with other people. For example, this could be someone who can't bring themselves to tell their boss, I really need Tuesday off because I have to go to an event. If you don't ask for the day off, you don't get the day off. You might become resentful and angry toward your boss and your job because you weren't given what you never even asked for. Oh, Lord. This can leave you stuck with anger and resentment because you end up internalizing it until you become subconsciously and consciously aggressive toward yourself on a deep-seated level. The energy of five can be used to clear out the obstacles that hinder our success. The negative side of that clearly is going to be vengeance, destruction for the sake of destruction, violence for the sake of violence. The art of war tells us, never go to battle for the sake of going to battle. This is the downfall of the number five. It can be a petty tyrant. It's important to keep that in balance. In order to use the energy of five appropriately, you have to stay calm, cool, and collected, while simultaneously being empowered and action-oriented and comfortable acting instinctively and asserting yourself. The aggression of the number five often comes through resentment And resentment often happens when one doesn't communicate one's own needs. It festers and lingers, and eventually you lash out, becoming violent on some level. This doesn't mean you're physically punching a hole in the wall, but a diminished five is an angry, rash energy field, and it's inherently destructive. So if you find you're easily getting annoyed and pissed off, your five is probably a little out of balance. The key is always respond and never react. In relation to Mars, the number five is about desire. Mars is passion and action, so this can mean going for what you want. There's nothing wrong with that. The danger comes when you want something so badly that you lose sight of everything else. Two of the great lessons we can learn from the number five are, quote, I can communicate what I want, and I can clear through those channels with communication. Assertion doesn't have to mean aggression. A real teacher helps activate something within you and for you. Whether it's a latent talent or your spiritual practice, a teacher gives you the tools to enhance your ability and become more in touch with your soul. They ignite your talent and guide you in how to use it. If you keep seeing the number five, the universe might be telling you to step into your role as a teacher more. Or maybe it's asking, what can you disrupt in your life? Where do you need to assert yourself? Where do you need to become more empowered? It's time to wake up and embrace your destiny. Interesting. All right, this is the final that he has on five. Interpreting five virtues of this number. Action-orientated, disruptive, able to edit and teach, assertive, energetic, passionate, fierce, inspired, able to destroy obstacles, go-getting. Vices: rash, hot-headed, buzzkiller, tyrannical, violent, destructive, oppressive, fearful, truculent, domineering, vindictive. Mottos: no. Say yes to no. I am comfortable asserting myself. It's easy and natural to me. Getting what I want is totally fine. Ooh, this one is really good. The last motto is, I clear the fear. Here are famous fives, which would typically mean people with the life path number of five. Although it might be people that have a lot of fives in their numerological chart. I'm guessing it's life path, though. So famous fives are Albert Einstein, Booker T. Washington, Tony Hawk, Che Guevara, Kobe Bryant, John Coltrane, and Neil Armstrong. All right. So, yeah, I hope that was helpful to you as it was helpful to me. And wow, the gold emphasis and the emphasis on the cutting away, the disruption and the removal of obstacles is very key to, and the teachings therein. And not all of them, but these are coinciding 100%. Key to is associated with the color gold, if you're familiar with Vedic astrology or Jyotish. One of the deities associated with Ketu is Ganesh or Ganesha. It's the Hindu god with the elephant for the head. And he is known as a remover of obstacles. People will pray or chant a Ganesh mantra and ask for certain obstacles to be removed. And it is very cutting. It's so Ketu and Rahu. In Western astrology, we know this as the north and south nodes, right? These are the points on the ecliptic, mathematically, where eclipses take place, and they can only take place at these points. They are always in transit, like everything else. And we also all have these energies within us and in our charts, both natal and progressed. So wherever you have Ketu and Rahu, I'm not sure because I don't know your chart, but I certainly know where they are for me. And whoo, Lord, 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 Lord. I have key two on my ascendant. I'll just tell you that much right now. It is, so it is something that, like, I don't have a choice. I have to work with it, learn how to harmonize with a karmic point that deals so much with loss and cutting away. And often it can present as isolation, but it's not like some doomsday thing. The point is to spiritualize you or get you to forge your own path. It is absolutely a disruptor because it is repulsed by the status quo, whereby its opposite counterpart, Rahu, is, you know, infatuated and just like a insatiable addict toward the material or the status quo or what have you, depending on where you have Rahu in your chart, but I'm just saying generally. Ketu is like, fuck that noise. Ketu can be seen as like the ascetic, you know, the renunciate. Doesn't have to be at all. But if, you know, Ketu is the outsider, and that ain't a bad thing. If you want to know somebody who had strong outsider energy throughout their life, Johnny Cash. Anybody who is super just one in a million, goes their own way, paves their own way, is just kind of like, fuck you, fuck the conveyor belt, part of my profanity, but, you know, whatever. You know, I'm going to do this my own way. It's the energy of the rebel, and it's also the energy of the mystic, and everybody has this within them. Depending on where it's placed and how significant of a role its, you know, influence is in this lifetime for you, you know, that's a sliding scale. It's not on everybody's ascendant like it is in my case, but I am absolutely not the only person on earth with Ketu on my ascendant. So it's just something that I've been really, really faced with lately, especially that discerning quality of... well, it was kind of what I was talking about in my podcast throughout the solstice, salve e coagula, so to separate. This is also to discern what do you want to take forward and create into something new, and what do you need to cast aside. And this is an alchemical process. That would be coagula. After you have separated, you then bring back together, but in a new form. That's the process. And so it's kind of everywhere right now, and I'm not the only one. I notice that when I'm going through things that seem very loud, both internally and externally, there's a ton of other people all dealing with it at the same time. This is the nature of existing within that which some call the bliss void indivisible, that which some call God, that which some call the interconnectedness of all things, the ontology, you know, whatever. It's... You know, we're all connected. This is quantum physics for people who don't believe in any kind of woo or spiritual anything. It's proven anyway, so whatever. So a big part of that is learning how to say no and discerning, like, which direction are we steering this ship? Because one of the downfalls of not being able to have discernment and a downfall of Ketu is you can be so lost in the absurdity of things, in the excess, in the just onslaught of noise, that you lose yourself and you feel like you have become invisible or nothingness. And that is something that people with dominant Ketu either placements or transits, which everyone will deal with, they often feel that way. And so it is our task to, you know, forge our way out of that. And the answer, of course, lies in the realm of the spirit. Well, I shouldn't say of course, because I don't have all the answers, but it's definitely not like, it does not lie in conforming. I'll tell you that. It does not lie with going along with what everyone else says that you should do, like, at all. I mean, in general, a lot of us could say that that's common sense for us, but with Ketu, it is like you are allergic to, like, that is just, you might as well take a cyanide pill if you want to get in line with the herd. I mean, it's that detrimental to that. You can't. And that's okay. You're not supposed to. That's why it's so painful. It's because you're being told by mind, body, spirit that's a hard pass, Brosephine. So you can't do it. And that's a gift. It can be terrifying because it's like, well, then who do I look to for direction? Ooh, scary, right? Because you probably won't see it reflected anywhere around you. And it can be hard to get the guidance from within if you are not, you know, using remedial things with that energy, which is to get inside your own body, because you can get very detached. And you don't want to get detached from yourself. Being detached from, like, worldly traps and snares is an asset. Ketu and Rahu both in the chart are typically known as malefics. But, excuse me if anybody overheard that, I totally just burped. but I was actually looking at someone's chart, not in the way I typically do. I was using the Vedic chart. This was when I was learning just like Jyotish fundamentals about a year ago. So I wasn't looking at it through like the typical wheel, but the way that Vedic has it set up. And I sat with this person for 3 hours looking at their chart and studying it through this new lens, and was mostly doing as I was instructed by my yogic teacher, which was to ask questions instead of just going in there and telling them about themselves. It's like, nah, motherfucker, you're learning. Like, ask them and then pay attention to where you see that come up in the chart. And I did. And I had been looking at people's natal charts and reading them for years, but through the Western lens, not this lens. And it was the first time that I had ever seen multiple benefics, or excuse me, malefics, and I'm referring to both Ketu and Saturn. I saw them act in this person's chart as actual benefics, and this person is not particularly spiritual or religious, and they definitely don't pay attention to, they don't study astrology, you know, but they had intuitively really integrated these lessons, and it really, really saved them a lot of fucking trouble. And this is a person that could have fallen into endless snares given what they do for a living. Their career path is, let's just say, it has them in a very public position. And we all know how people are in this culture. We can deify people that are super public. We will vilify them just as quickly, but both things are very dangerous. Those are unnatural states for humans to be idolized. And so that's very hard. And it can really like jade a person. And I wouldn't even really fault them for that, dude. Like, honestly. But he's not like that. And I saw the way that Ketu was interacting in his chart, especially with other planets in aspect or immediate proximity, and as well as Saturn. And he had Saturn in a really like challenging place. We always say it's challenging, right? But for the path that he chose in life, I'm like, I'm kind of seeing Ketu and Saturn being your biggest allies, honestly, and you navigating things that are dangerous in many situations, and his ability to, as soon as he sensed in his physical being that something was off, he would cut it off and no room to even further entertain or be in La La Land. La La Land would be like Rahu, right? But the cutting off, the end, the just nope. I already know what my way is, and it ain't this. Nope. Pivot. That's a well-integrated Ketu, and that's what he's been able to do. I think that's a big reason for his sustained success. It's also helped him not become so ensnared by things that are the easiest things to take down any human being, regardless of astrology and numerology. This is across the board. But he happened to have Ketu right next to those two influences. And I was like, oh, all right, okay. I can, and the stories that this person was telling me, I'm like, holy shit. And even Saturn and its proximity to another planet, I'm not going to say too much, but typically that's a very challenging aspect. And it was interesting because I also saw that kind of save his ass. And save him quite a bit of grief, I would think, right? Like, I'm not him, but just based on what I was hearing, I'm like, wow. He really has been able to, in many ways, like, truly be the autonomous conductor of his life in alignment with a vision that he has not compromised. And that's, I mean, could you ask for anything more than clarity and the ability to adhere to that higher calling? I mean, hello. So whether benefic, whether malefic, if it comes up and it's asking to be addressed and seen, as our in-house Substack, a Vedic astrologer, has told me personally many times, the obstacle is the way. That which, you know, blocks you, and this is me talking now, that which blocks you is, you know, begets your attention of, well, why is that? And the way out is through. And both Saturn or Shani and Ketu will teach you that just in different ways. Working with Saturn is very different than working with Ketu. There is some overlap for sure, like detachment and the barefoot Vedic astrologer on Substack has referred to as divine disassociation. So in modern terms, to not take things so personally and to not be so attached, because you know, something she had said to me is like, she said, girl, you are going to be an outsider your whole life. Like, this is who you are. And I had been resisting that for so long, and so much pain came from that, of just like, why do I never fit into any of the boxes? Like, what's wrong with me? It's like, nothing. I'm just, that's not my path. That's not why I'm here. And that can help you kind of look at how to move forward and how to also have compassion for yourself and therefore others and move forward more free, because Ketu is a moksha or liberator point. And so what does it want in the end? This, a lot of these teachings for five are also very Uranian. So it's very interesting to me that Mars is the planetary association. And I wonder what, like, more, well, I won't go down that rabbit hole, but it's interesting. It's interesting. So perhaps this will help for those of us that have struggled with how to integrate and harmonize with that martial energy. It's hard. It can be really volatile. Sorry, my little headphone fell out. Very volatile, especially for those of us that are hotheads, and that's me for sure. It can be so hard to be like, bro, how do I think for me the answer is physical movement. Because if I do not channel the energy with intent, then I kind of just get my ass handed to me. It uses me if I do not use it. And when experienced at an unconscious level, what do we default to? We default to like our baseline instinctual habits. And unless those are consciously refined, it's gonna look like anger and outbursts and that like petty tyrant bullshit, or worse, you know, God forbid. But yeah, that would be how you abandon the vices and step into the virtues, I suppose. So I'm gonna stop talking and finish the cutting away process today, which for me at the moment looks like clearing out my entire living space, cleaning up, and also integrating a few new things into the space. That is the goal for today. And also making sure I do something for my connection today. So I'll be meeting up with some women in a few hours, and that will be most excellent. And I wish everybody a beautiful day. Bye. Oh, by the way, if you haven't seen the last post called The Switch Off, Mark Emery had tagged me in a note on Substack, and it's an honor, first off, and the fact that I saw it when I did was nothing short of divine timing, and I wrote about that, and I shared exactly what he said, but I'm really big on let's find the solutions, because we all know what the problem is. I understand the addiction to like doom dopamine. I've been guilty of it myself, of just obsessing over the problem. But it's like, you know what, dude, it's not helping anybody. It's making all of us more sick and nothing is changing. So like, let's throw our weight into the solutions. And I've seen people do it before. I know it can be done. You might not be super popular on social media because the majority of people are programmed to become magnetized to fear and anger and outrage and anything that, you know, can kind of get that adrenaline and cortisol pumping. It really is like a drug. It's like a high. It's really fucking weird. But who gives a fuck, right? Like, I think that's a kind of a evil thing to do, like make a career out of just siphoning and dealing misery to people. Like, yeah, they might like subconsciously be drawn to it, but like, Jesus, do you have to fucking, you know, be the one to feed them that? So for those of us that want to do a solution, Mark Emery has one. And I think this is even just his suggestion of a coordinated effort in applying this idea of a disconnect from the internet, from all apps, like all data harvesting things, everything, even just for 24 hours would have a significant impact. Because think about how much money goes in to harvesting our data on and off of apps 24/7. People pay so much money to get that. And it is dependent on our consumption and willing harvesting of our own selves into the machine for that money-making thing and surveillance state to thrive. So if we starved it for 24 hours, first off, you hit them in their pocketbooks by the millions if you get enough people to do it. And you also really throw a wrench in the algorithm, because the algorithm's point is to infer a character profile about you that can essentially predict your behavior. They tell you it's for marketing so they can give you better recommendations. It's not. It's for to control you. It's for like a really, really precise implementation of pre-crime system. I don't want to live like that. I don't think you do either. So like, we should probably stop building it, because it can't exist without our participation. We are the engine in the machine of tyranny. We are not just helpless victims. It would not exist without our daily input of way the fuck too much. So please see the last post. I will link it here if you're on Substack. If you're not on Substack and you're listening to this on the podcast, I'll put the link to that post in the show notes. You can go check it out, join the comment section, and let us know, you know, like what region you're in, if you're in on doing this. We could start with just 24 hours of disruption via silence, just via non-participation, non-consent. We're not like doing anything crazy. We're just not engaging with the problem. And if you want to do it, you know, we're going to have to coordinate it. So we need your input, your ideas, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah, I hope you found the information on the number 5 interesting, especially if it shows up for you. For those of you who are in like a cutting away or are very overwhelmed or struggling with who you are or what you want and feel like you're overcommitting, spread too thin, burnt out, these practices I find are very medicinal toward that, because that's usually because we're saying yes to the things that we should be saying no to. And saying no to or neglecting the things that really, really need our attention. So that's all I have for you today. Okay, bye.